episode 8, Underground Espionage. Tara, how is it going?
8 already, Mike?
It is. We are at episode 8, just ripping through pornography, exploitation.
Fantastic films.
Old 30s classics. Oh, I'm sorry, 20s classics. Haxton's the 20s. 30s, we still haven't done a movie from 30s, though I'm sure
I would love
will.
To. I love them. And I am really excited to discuss this because I my head is a flutter. I have so many things to say. I don't know how we're going to do this in under an hour.
Well, our episodes have all been roughly around an hour, a little over. Mm-hmm. The Tenement episode was a little shorter due to our self-inflicted
sickness. Oh, we almost,
sickness.
You know, trying to murder ourselves,
yes.
Apparently, with fun.
Yes.
and fun it was.
No, we're excited to talk about Luigi Cozzi's The Black Cat.
Mm-hmm.
This is by far the most batshit movie we've discussed here on Underground Espionage.
Well, and we wanted to discuss it because it was like a challenge, you know, where there were certain like goals we set up for ourselves,
yeah,
of things that we wanted to understand.
Yeah.
Some clarity that we wanted. Maybe we didn't feel that we paid enough attention the first time we watched it, so we couldn't properly appreciate.
I don't know how much clarity has been gained. But we're going to attempt to.
I mean, my primary goal was to figure out gain some clarity about the fetus. We'll talk about all of these things in a minute. Additionally, our goals, but you know, frequently with the things that we watch, like I guess, you know, in my mind, maybe if somebody hadn't seen them, I want to prepare them for what they're getting into. So I try to like, you know, tell them how like cohesive it is, if there is a plot, if you are able to follow the plot, or if it's just kind of like a beautiful mystery that's laid out before you. And this is kind of more of the latter case. It's more of like a beautiful mystery that's laid before you. You figure it out. You find out what the plot is. It's not like craftily woven into a way that takes you on a journey.
A sign of a great movie is one that doesn't give you a plot. It has you.
You just decide what the plot is. Yeah, it's kind
of
like a choose your own adventure film.
Of a great movie. So, yes, we are excited to discuss The Black Cat.
Mm-hmm.
In listening, I wanted to emphasize, in case you didn't hear the extra segment on this week's Noise Extra, really wanted to emphasize how much we've been loving the DSM-3 LP.
Really love it.
It's important to continue to emphasize how incredible that record is. They're just one of our favorite newish modern, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, have a nice grip of things out. Been around a couple years, but the LP is by far their best stuff yet.
Yeah, it keeps you company in the void.
It really, really does. The track Cluster Bomb, especially. But it's just really a modern industrial classic. Sits right alongside stuff like Grey Wolves, which we've also been listening to a lot. We actually just hit stop on Blood and Sand, which is always one that we return to and always sounds different and better than ever. I love that, right? Mm-hmm. Like albums like that. And actually, even before that, we're listening to MB, The Plain Truth. That's certainly one that always is better than
ever. And with abstract things that'll have this like familiarity will just kind of wash over you, where you're like, oh, I know this, hold on, I know this, I love this, and then you can just kind of settle back and
it's
it
so great. The points that you know, the peaks and the valleys of these recordings, but been a really good listening week, as we discussed on the last news extra, but just in case you didn't hear that, just emphasizing that DSM-3 to make sure to grab it, because I believe it's only 97 copies, so that's going to be gone. If it's not already gone, it might actually already be gone. I have not checked, but it's been a really good listening week as well as a viewing week because we watched The Black Cat. Now, Tara, you said you had a news story you wanted to talk about before we dove into the movie.
You want to hear my news? More news. Like, I get excited if I hear about some new deep sea creature, something fascinating occurring within the natural world. So you would imagine my excitement when I read the headline, horrifying skeleton-like creature leaves vacationers baffled after appearing on local beach. See the photos. Okay, so Mike, I'm going to show you the photos after I talk about this. It's two people in Kent, England. They encounter what they describe as a mermaid-like creature. Now, Now you see my excitement. I'm going to show you the photos, Mike. I want your real-time reaction of what this thing is. Are you ready?
What the
Okay,
fuck?
Now let me show you the side view.
I feel like this is some sort of...
just absolute garbage bullshit.
Oh, come on.
And then somebody's like, well, maybe it came off a boat. And everybody's fake. Like, well, it's like, it's skin stretched over. I'm like, no, it's some bullshit person who stuck a plastic fishtail on, like, you know, some sort of like fake mummy golem like creature that they made. I don't. And it's like, and no part of this would say skull, skeleton. Every part of it says like carved fake bullshit. And then the people on the beach are like, I just had to have my picture made with it because no one would believe us. I'm like, why wouldn't they believe you that somebody left some like bullshit, fake ass cryptid that they found? Like,
bullshit.
Garbage news. I'm so angry. New York Post covered it. People, lots of news outlets covered it. And I say, fuck you guys.
It's almost like you can't trust the media. So weird.
Stop trolling me.
So
weird. If you're
going to
put a cryptid in there, make it a cryptid. Don't give me some garbage piece of wood.
It was really
bullshit.
Until this second today, I just put all my faith in the media. I trust every single thing they say.
Well,
and
you know
now,
what?
You know what, Tara? My world,
Mike,
has been
you
rocked.
You can't blame a few bad apples. You know, a few
okay,
bad
so we should
apples,
just trust
you
the media.
Should
gotcha.
Continue. I don't want you to not trust
okay, so
everything you read.
You
so
heard
continue
it here
to
first.
Trust everything you read.
The underground trusts the media. This
just
is
not
a very
who,
important
who wrote this
thing.
Article. Toria Sheffield. Don't trust that person because this is some bullshit. It's even
everyone
like,
else, though.
It's even like sitting straight up on the beach like, God, oh, I would love, I don't know. I don't know what I'd love to do, but. Fuck these guys.
Fuck.
So
well, hey, you know, and before we get into the Black Hat, there is some sad news this week as we did lose an American treasure, Wingshauser.
R.I.P. Wingshauser.
Truly one of the all-time greats.
Absolutely magnetic. Stole every scene he was in. I don't care what type of program, like high, low, TV, film, whatever it is. If Wingshauser is in it, I want to see it.
Yes.
What an absolute, just stunning example of charisma, personality,
yes,
and talent.
Everything about it. He, from Vice Squad to Pale Blood.
To Beverly Hills
to his arc in Beverly Hills 90210.
Which was just fantastic.
Incredible. And to Champagne for Bullets, which may be one of his greatest roles. I can't recommend that one enough.
Yeah.
If you want to see a truly one man's vision of what a movie is, that being the person who made Champagne for Bullets, and then Wingshauser being in that movie, just being in his own movie.
Being in his own kind of again, like, it's a choose-your-own-adventure type of situation where you can look at this very singular vision by this director, or you can watch whatever Wingshauser was doing.
Yes.
It's great.
Tough Guys Don't Dance is another great one. I mean, look, anything Wingshauser is in, we would watch. If we haven't watched, we will watch. We will watch again.
Let's take a moment and give him a salute, Mike.
Salute.
We're saluting
Wingshauser.
We are
saluting Wingshauser. Truly an American legend, and no better time to go revisit any of his work to just remember what he gave us.
And you know what? I don't really know anything about him personally, and I don't think that matters.
I believe he was just a CIA agent who also was a disciple of the Huck Finn religion, who also was a violent pimp.
A pussy slanging badass.
Who also was, yeah, exactly, yeah. So,
that's all that needs to be said.
Yeah,
that's all that needs
all
to be
his
said.
Roles,
occupying the margins of society.
And he
all
did
around.
the song, the Vice Squad theme song was him.
God, he's so cool
as well. So
yeah, he's got to be a great guy. He's so cool.
R.I.P.
I refuse to believe
Wings.
That he's not anything other than a fantastic.
Well,
no one's
fudding you, babe.
I know. I won't have it.
I wouldn't have it either. Well, Tara, I think it's time to get into the Black Hat. And I think to get the
roll up our sleeves.
Atmosphere for the Black Hat, we need to play the song that kicks us off, that is on the Blu-ray menu screen, that almost makes you not even want to hit play on the movie because you just want to keep hearing the song.
Yeah, you just want to hang out and chill with the fantastic band.
So before we get into the Black Hat, Bang Tango, take it away. And no, you will not be hearing Bang Tango because we were flagged for putting in an excerpt of the song Someone Like You by Bang Tango. So if you're hearing this, you missed it. You may have caught it if you heard the episode right before and you just decided to re-listen for some reason, but we did get flagged. So taking it down so you may hear this song being referenced after this, and you're just going to have to go listen to Someone Like You by Bang Tango on your own. And while I'm here, I will say that later in the episode, I postulate that the Cosmos footage in The Black Cat is reused from Luigi Cozzi's Hercules movie. Yes, it is. I did watch it after we recorded the episode to confirm that. So you'll hear me postulate it, but you can tell me as I'm postulating it while you're listening that, yes, indeed, it is reused footage. Okay, so go pause this, listen to Bang Tango, Someone Like You, and then come back. Someone Just Like You.
Yeah. Whoa. No, it's true. And I would say that, like, although this Bang Tango track was fantastic in this film, watching the music video, the lead singer has just one of those, like, cave of a maw, you know, like a giant mouth that seems, like, impossibly large.
Yeah.
Much like Johansson, much
another
like...
Another R.I.P.
Steven Tyler, like many. Yeah, exactly. I was really impressed by the jaw on this guy. So, oh boy, what a treasure, what a treat. So
Tara,
where
so
are you thinking about
starting? Let's take a minute and really sit back, because I know I can see it in your eyes that there's a lot you want to get out, but you gotta dole it. We gotta sit, ruminate. We got to make this happen. So, I like your idea of starting with Luigi Cozzi. Fantastic director. Directed some favorites here in the underground household. Paganini Horror.
Another plot that draws you in, but it doesn't really provide any explanation.
Contamination. One of our favorite... Italian alien, influenced movies.
Yeah.
The Hercules movies that he did, which are just
fantastic.
Unreal, need to be seen to be believed. We have covered all these movies on Home Time, but I'm sure there'll be a day where we have to cover them again over here on Underground Espionage. Truly, as the years go on, one of our absolute favorite Italian directors. Mm-hmm. And The Black Cat's one that's been on the radar for a while. We've been recommended this for a bit, people knowing that, oh, you guys are probably going to love this movie. And for whatever reason, it's just taken a minute to get. The Severin Blu-ray had been out for a minute. Finally got around to getting it. And it's one of those that has always been in the stack. A lot of times when we pull out Blu-rays to watch, we'll pull out three or four and sit them there and decide what to watch. And a lot of times we like to grab the ones that are still in the shrink wrap because like, we know we haven't watched those.
Well, I'll be honest. The first few times you were like, let's watch The Black Cat, I was confusing it with the Black Cat movie that was always on USA. Do you know that one?
I mean, Fulci did a Black Cat movie. It might be that.
It's the one that about a murderous, like, it is Edgar Allan Poe's story of the Black Cat.
Oh, you're saying this is not Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat?
I'm not saying that. This is Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat for sure. However, it was more related to that. It was more of like a mystical black cat walking through different tales. I think it was an anthology. Yeah.
Not Cat's Eyes?
That too. Maybe I was confusing it with that. So anyway, I digress, sir.
No,
thought, again, in my muddled brain that cannot like always clamp down on the precise title, that's why I was always like, I don't want to watch that now.
Well, this one too goes by many other titles, Demon Six,
I know.
as well as others, but
yes,
so yeah, it's just one that
Demon Six de Profundis,
yeah, it's just one that every time we went to pop something in, you know, for whatever reason, this kept going back in the stack and coming
what
out
a
back
mistake
in the stack.
That was
well, look, sometimes things are just meant to be at the right time. So when we did finally decided to pop this in, about a good 5-10 minutes in, we were just like, oh my God.
Yes.
We love this movie. And knew that we had to put it in the queue to do an episode on. And I got to say, too, I've been really loving the second watch being when we do the episode, as we discussed this last week. The second watch is kind of sometimes the best time.
Such as this, we really, I mean, you really just need to see it twice because it's so good that you can't really digest what you've experienced until the second time. But let's.
Well, I would say it's, and I would actually say something that I it's a quote that I say all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And if I haven't said it on this series, I'm going to say it here and now. Lux Interior once said about Ed Gein. Ed Gein wasn't a good man, but he was a great man. And that's how we see a lot of these movies. We see these movies as, is it a good movie? Maybe not. But is it a great movie?
It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
You know what it is? It's terrific. Now, I just thought we would start here also by saying at the birth of this film, Daria Nicolodi had been writing a script where she wanted to tie up the Argento series with The Third Mother. And so when she wasn't getting anywhere with Argento, she decided to bring it to Luigi Cozzi, a friend, and say, hey, can we do this? And he said, sure, sounds great. And then he started fudding himself and was like, I respect Argento so much. I don't want to step on his toes. I'm going to have to change this around a lot so that I'm not trying to make a sequel to one of his films. So when he changed it and presented it to Daria, she was like, I'm out. Sorry, I no longer have an interest in being in this film. So originally she was going to be in it and be a maker. Now she's just credited as a consultant or an uncredited.
She's not even credited.
She's an uncredited consultant, but she was the jumping off point for this film. And do you think she regrets not being in this episode?
I certainly would. I mean, she was in Paganini Horror and she at this time was divorced from Dario. So she, yes, exactly. She wanted to make the Third Mother movie. And this is important going into this because let's be clear. Let's be clear about a couple of things. One thing to be clear about is that there's nothing clear about this movie. Even on the second watch, when we were really trying to dissect it and really get to the bottom of it, by the end, it's all out the window to me. Maybe, Tara, you found something else, but
I tied up a few.
Okay. Two, while the name of this movie is Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat, go ahead and just pop that out of your head.
The only part of this that is like Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat is that there are black cats present in this film.
And the movie that they're filming at the very beginning is called The Black Cat.
Yeah, and the film, yeah, it's a film set of The Black Cat, and it's a slasher film that they're filming. So they use a quote from Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat, and it says, as a matter of fact, Edgar Allan Poe wrote the following. My wife regarded all black cats as witches in disguise. And I abbreviated that a lot, but do you know the premise of The Black Cat, Mike?
Yeah,
it's
which totally makes sense to me. So I guess in a way that is how The Black Cat relates to this movie. Because
the black cats are witches in disguise. But even in The Black Cat of Edgar Allan Poe, that was just something to throw in to like increase the man's paranoia because he had a cat that he had... was a beloved pet, and then he would get wasted and he started to abuse the cat. The more he drank and become angry, then he stabbed the cat's eye out, then hung the cat in a fit of rage, and the cat's body disappeared and their house burned down. And then he got another cat who looked the same except it had a different white patch, and he started paranoidly thinking that he saw like a gallows or a guillotine or something deadly within the white patch of the cat. And so he decided in a drunken rage to stab that cat as well. His wife jumped in. He stabbed his wife, walled her in the wall downstairs in his home. And then as the police were looking for her, he was pounding on the wall saying, look how sturdy my walls are. And they heard a howl, and it was that cat sitting on his dead wife's body, which revealed the crimes that he had taken. So that is why the cat was a witch. I'm just being succinct here.
No, that was great.
Because that's a story that you can sum up easily.
Yes.
Because it has like a definitive plot, and it has like different techniques for like revealing things. It's really clear in what's happening. So that was a joy. To really sum up that story. Unlike, I mean, it's not a joy. It's a joy to try to sum up this story, but it can't be as succinct. Should I try?
It's certainly a joy to watch this movie. Well, Tara, I'm definitely curious as to how you'd like to begin this summation. So I would like you to try, because I'm very curious as to what you're going to say.
I haven't even... Oh, okay. So, you know, I like to, before we talk about something, to just kind of sum it up real quick, just in case people haven't heard it, just so they know kind of like the scope of what we're discussing, and especially with the off the rails things, so that we have a framework to work around. So I guess now I will say that we start with a film within a film. We have an actor and a director and an actor who are married. Hold on, wait, what are their names again? Anne and what's the Mark? So Anne and Mark are married. They're very successful. Mark is a director. They have a lovely baby. They have a really cool nanny. Their life is great. Their best friends are also successful actors and producers. And this director, Mark, is trying to create a new film, and it's going to be based around Lavanna, the final overriding witch in the Suspiria De Profundis tale. And as they decide to make this, the best friend's wife decides she wants the part, but Anne is supposed to have the part. So both women are secretly vying for this position while supernatural things start occurring, and Lavanna starts making appearances and menacing Anne and saying that she will never play this role. And then the director gets concerned about his authenticity and starts investigating Lavanna and other attempts to portray Lavanna. And then he discovers that people have been met with violence and sorrow, and their life is upended, and people get stabbed, and things turn green. There's slime and goo coming out of people's mouths. And sometimes it's a dream, and sometimes it's not. There's also a fairy named Sybil who appears holding a really cool glowing ball. And then maybe the world is going to end because Lavanna will be unleashed upon the planet because these filmmakers were trying to bring her into the world by bringing her into everybody's mindscape. Mike, have I done kind of a sum up?
You did.
I missed a bunch.
You did great. I would also just add that there is also a fetus in the cosmos and shots of the cosmos.
Mm. Yeah, we have some big pictures. I think part of this film that's so great is that we're looking at the microcosm and the macrocosm, right?
Yeah.
So we're looking at that Cozy really wants to make it clear that Lavanna is a supernatural being involved in the inner workings of the universe itself. So really we pan out to the Earth and we get those lovely, like, kind of the same like cosmic visions in the Hercules films, like the lasers, like everybody knows the like old like 80s style, like laser beams and glowing stars and things that they animated glow.
I wanted to pop on the Hercules movies just to see if it was actually reused footage. It feels like it was.
Yeah.
It feels like it was.
Okay. So now I feel like we can begin this discussion now that we all kind of know what we're dealing with here. It's going to be one of the films where they're making a film, but the making of the film brings something into reality, right? So we start with Bango Tango.
Bango Tango.
Bango Tango. I can't say Bang. Bang Tango is hard.
It is tough.
I would really rather say Bango Tango.
Well, you know what? Go ahead.
Bang Tango. Bong Tango. So that really sets a nice...
Yeah, the soundtrack's amazing.
Frantic tone.
Bang Tango and White Lion. And then another great song that it took us a while to figure out where this song came from. And it's even still totally unclear because it seems like it only appears in this movie. But it's an incredible song. So the music is...
Yeah.
This is 1990 or 89. I mean, you know, sometimes it's unclear.
Sometimes it says 89, sometimes it says 90.
But, you know, it's still... like,
get the gist.
It's still... we still have, you know, Sunset Strip hair metal as the soundtrack, which is just always adds a great atmosphere.
And thank God, because I want to see this film that they're filming, because I love that during the film, they actually play the soundtrack of the film while they're filming it. You know what I mean? So they're going to go like 40s soundstage, where like a Marx Brothers movie where the music is live in the scene. You know what I mean?
Well, always with movie within movie scenes when it's totally implausible.
But the joy that I love about this time is that it's... So they're filming a slasher with a curvy blade and some like obscured face kit. It looks like a cool film, but the thing I like about it and this whole thing is the largeness of the hair. We have full hair, full makeup,
full hair,
like full perm, brushed out curls, just big, big, big eyeshadow, mascara. Every drop of makeup that could be slapped on a face is there. We have stretchy, tight skirts. We have hosiery. Hosiery, except when Anne lets me down at the end. The final scene we'll discuss, but I don't know what happened. Like, everybody looks fantastic and glamorous and beautiful, and then all of a sudden Anne shits the bed and wears something garbage.
Yeah.
So, but we get high heels, we get hosiery, we get shiny belts, eye candy. And speaking of eye candy, you know, the film wraps, everybody goes away, and then we get to see the Mark, the main character, Mark and Anne, their wonderful home.
Oh, it's so great.
Boy, I was trying to find that place. And it's supposed to be, was it outside of Ravenna?
Outside of Rome. Just outside of Rome. Yeah, it's, the house looks incredible. And
it's one of those cool, like, curvy homes. It's just a testament to like what you can do with like concrete or stucco. Like, there's not a straight line in the home.
It looks amazing. Phenomenal. The lighting inside is very reminiscent of the lighting inside our home. And in fact, sitting behind me right now is a glowing ball, much like the one being held by Sybil throughout the movie. And we should say at this point, Mark is played by Urbano Barberini, most famously in opera. So we have... He's great, and also another great addition to this cast is Anne's best friend, Nora, played by Carolyn Monroe, of Maniac, of Slaughter High, and
so
of
things.
The song that's in Don't Open Till Christmas, and many other things. So this cast is so great.
Yes,
and Anne's so great, too. Anne's played by Florence Guerin.
And
I think I pronounced
it.
Did you?
Let me... Well, how do you spell it?
G-U-E-R-I-N. I think I did good.
Okay, well, we'll go.
So just setting the tone and the look and the vision of this great movie.
Yes. I mean, part of that, you know, internal lighting that is now much like in The Black Room, how we are now going to get our glowing end table. I haven't pulled the trigger on it yet because I'm making sure I'm getting the one I want, but I will be pulling the trigger soon. The glowing tulips, the light up tulips.
Fantastic.
Oh my God, my first cheese shop that I worked in the 90s, the Mousetrap, they sold light up tulips. And I have regretted that for over 20 years that I did not purchase these light up glowing tulips. And now I'm going to have to figure out how to get some, because how phenomenal do they look? Like, unexpected glowing elements.
You know, we love it. In fact, there's even a scene where the glowing drink.
Oh my God. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. And for no reason whatsoever. I mean, oh my God. Okay. Well, we'll get there. So yes, where am I going to go from here?
We're in the house. We're seeing their domestic life. They have a kid. They have a nanny.
They have like kind of the mix of modern and traditional. They have brocade wallpaper that matches their brocade drapes. And then we're set up with the amazing nanny, Sarah, who says that her little nephew is a big fan and he would like to come by and visit sometime, can he? And you know what?
Anne's just Anne so nice.
Is so sweet that she's like, yeah, send him by. Like, what a crazy thing. My cousin's a big fan of yours. And she was like, have him come by the house. Wow. And like, she's really, really nice. The baby has a nursery that is absolutely insane looking. It has.
Yeah, it is.
Like Mickey Mouse posters on the wall. And then these heavy ass balloons that have clearly been ripped off the wall at points, because you can see the like holes where they were ripped from the wall. And you see why, because they have these pull cords. So I'm sure they went to pull them off and just yanked them off the wall, because those little, they look so heavy. I'm just obsessed with those balloons.
You
on
were
the wall
very,
too.
You have been obsessed with those balloons since the first
still
watch.
Still obsessed. So you know, we have all these scenes, and then like this is part of like the the craftsmanship. I'm just like, if you're like, you guys, Mike, Tara, why are you jumping around every place? You keep going back and forth, because we're kind of going in the crazy snippets this film is showing you, because there's a lot crammed in.
Yeah.
So we see this just off the rails nursery that's never existed before, this insane house, these crazy people who kind of like stare at each other beautifully. And then all of a sudden there's a grave that says Sybil, 1861 to 1871. And just like, and it looks like an old haunted graveyard, and there's throbbing lights around
it. Yeah, throbbing neon lights. The music's incredible, just great synth madness. Yeah. And yeah, so that
is
the thing.
Like, what's this have to do with anything?
That's the thing, is this movie does that. It cuts to things. It cuts out. You're not sure. Are they dreaming? Is this happening? Are we looking in the past? Are we in the present? Is this happening right now? Did this happen 100 years ago? Did this happen 300 years ago?
And also, even like, I had to pause it to know it said 1861 to 1871. Like, we had a little debate about it. I'm like, what the hell does that even say? I can't imagine watching this on VHS. Like, yeah. You could not have understood anything that was happening.
And trust me, I'm not saying that watching it on Blu-ray makes you understand it even more. Yeah.
I'm just saying I know what the words say at this point. I'm not saying they make any sense.
Oh, yeah. No,
yeah,
totally.
Well, you know what?
This
does. I was really excited to see that. I was like, okay, at some point we're going to get a 10-year-old hanging around. So whoever that 10-year-old is going to be who was in this grave.
And we do
And we don't know the significance of them, but we do get Sybil.
Yeah.
But not yet. When we get Sybil, well, the thing about Sybil is, Mike, just since we're already on the topic of Sybil.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk about Lavanna and all of that. And I'm just going to bring it up next because that's when it comes up at the dinner party. Nowhere does Sybil factor into Lavanna.
I was about to say that as you started talking about it. I was like, wait a minute, what the hell?
Never. Sybil is just... Sybil is a fairy, but Sybils aren't really, like, fairies. Like, I mean...
I just had that thought of, like, what does she really actually have to do with
anything?
What's
this fuck got to do with anything?
She sort of explains something at one point. She sort of wraps up the movie.
But really, like, does she do anything? Okay. Sybils prophesized at holy sites. A Sybil at Delphi was dated back as early to the 11th century, so we all know about that. But like Sybils are like the ancient Roman prophetic ladies, right? That's a Sybil. Like, they're not like little fairies.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tara. And it's something
they're
that
oracles.
Just dawned on me.
Sybil is an oracle.
I'm not exactly sure what her place in the movie was. And hey, probably going to have some more questions as we go on.
I doubt we will have another single question.
Now.
So somehow we just see. And then also, so like Sybil was an oracle from 1861 to 1871, 10-year-old girl. Okay, well, anyway, we're going to cut to a fancy dinner party in our really cool Italian place. Again,
I think it's their house.
Well, no, I'm saying it's a cool Italian place. It's like the whole thing about like the Italian films is you get these insane sets.
No matter what.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And even when I was reading more about like from the actors when we were watching the extras, they said they had like three apartments that they were using for the interior scenes. Yeah. So
Their houses, because that house is what they filmed a lot of it in.
Yeah, and they did more in another apartment. They said there were two other apartments because, Mike, they drove a car through it. I don't think they drove a car through that house.
What?
I don't think so.
It's possible.
I have a
feeling
they wouldn't.
A car does get driven through the
very
house
safely, though. We'll discuss it. Anyway, so as they're having their fancy dinner party in their fancy home, they discuss why they want to make this film to wrap up the Argento series. And
every time it's mentioned that they say Suspiria, the goblin song starts playing. It's so insane.
It's really good. We got the idea for the movie from a book by Baudelaire the poet. It's called Suspiria de Profundis. It's about Lavanna, the third mother, the mater lacrimum, the tearful, the mother of tears. And they said, did somebody actually make this movie? As a matter of fact, yes, it was a big hit. Dario Argento made this movie. It's Suspiria. And I must admit, it's very good. And the reason I'm talking in my voiceover voice is because when I'm reading what they actually said, I can't help but go into voiceover voice. Because when they're doing voiceover, sometimes they explain things like this very gently and quickly.
The dubbing in this movie is extra wild, and it just adds to it. And the thing is, it was actually filmed in English. So It's the dubbing is even weirder somehow.
Yeah, it's filmed in English and then dubbed, so whatever. It's makes it even more supernatural and really, really wild. So, you know, they discuss that. So, and again, as with Suspiria, I was always like, what's Baudelaire got to do with any of this? Because I was always like, how did Baudelaire? And they address that because later in this film, they actually go to an esotericist and she explains that it's actually Thomas de Quincey. It's not a Baudelaire thing. And that is true. It's not Baudelaire. It's Thomas de Quincey. But I'm glad they really wrapped that up. So in some things, it's like it's disambiguating certain things and really ambiguating other things.
Exactly. And Tara, they discuss how the third witch is named Lavanna, and they also discuss how they did get the biggest producer in Italy, Leonard Levin.
Yeah, it sucks that I didn't figure that out the first time. And I forgot on this watch. And then you were like, Levin. And I was like, oh, that's right. Wow. Well, you know, that even, you know, we're going to go into the, well, I'll wait until we go to the esotericist because I want everybody to go on the kind of like a,
go on this journey with
Let's
us.
Go on the journey in the way that it's laid out, because apparently that's how they wanted to. I just want to say that if you are like me and you need, and you just like love the eye candy of it all, you're going to love the body hair in this film. The men have a bunch of it and it's in the most unexpected of places. Really, really great. There's a bunch of chest hair that'll make you do a double tape. I imagine on the VHS, you didn't even know it was chest hair. You probably thought it was a shirt. Wow. We get some really satiny, silky nightgowns and robes. It really just makes me excited, gets me rubbed up. So here we go. Anne can't sleep after the dinner party. Everybody's been talking about Lavanna. It's been revealed that Mark wants Anne to play Lavanna. So she's thinking to herself, I'm such a sweetie pie. I have such a little angel face. How am I going to play this mother of tears as I've been asked to do? And she was told, who told her that Lavanna had a veil? Oh, she was reading the script.
She went down, couldn't sleep,
read the script.
In the green light of the home, which, you know, we get.
Get it. Gotta have, you know,
some green light going on right now.
Kind of a turquoise and some yellow, a bunch of yellow. And then they said that she had a veil of crepe wrapped around her head 3 times. So Anne thinks about Lavanna and starts wrapping crepe on her hand and then around her head. And then, as the notes say, Lavanna's gross ass breaks out of the mirror and spews green spinach and slime, then some red foam. And then we see egg yolks dropped into a lit tumbler glass. And maybe it's Alka-Seltzer, but the only thing I know is that that glass is lit from within and Mark is walking around with
this
it.
This is true. Now let's rewind, because it's shocking how gross Lavanna looks.
It's
and then
jarring.
It's shocking how gross when she's spewing green all over Anne. And yeah, there's a lot of really gross effects in this. And she looks so disgusting. Her face is just this lumpy black. Her eyes are
like
milky,
waxy pustules,
and it's like really big. It's like oversized, so she has this like big, oversized, disgusting, misshapen head that spews gross green and black and red liquid all over people. And she
it's jarring. You have like a night scene and a lady walking around at night, and then all of a sudden she just leaps from the mirror
and just attacks Anne. Is just, you'll never play Lavanna. You'll never have me.
She's
on
so
the screen.
Nasty, and her hands have like, she has like witch's fingers
and then
boils.
Just, is just vomiting green all over Anne's
and
face.
I was like, it really does look like chewed up like zucchini and stuff. And then later in the film, they say that she had green slime coming out of her, but I think that they wanted it to be thicker and more slime-like. They just couldn't
to
get the texture right.
To me, it's as slimy as it gets.
To
I don't
me,
know. It
it's
was just
grosser than slime, because it's not even slime. It's like a, it's kind of like like you just puked up a bunch of zucchini.
But this scene too, it just, it really goes with what's going to be happening throughout the movie. The colors are crazy, the lighting's crazy, greens and reds. She's puking and just shredding 80s hair metal, courtesy of either Bang Tango or White Lion, is just shredding over it. So it's just like,
just
and it
frantic.
Also comes in and stops. Like when it cuts, it just cuts.
Just
a lot of times
just without
like,
it.
Yeah. So this scene just is wild, totally insane, chaotic, loud, gross, and we love it.
And it, and while the craziness is happening, it cuts to, like I said, just like a highball glass, but it's lit. Like there's
it's
a like
so
that's
wild.
Like a light in
yeah.
it. And then you see Mark walking around with it, like it's totally normal to have a light, like a lit highball glass.
Yeah.
And what looked like egg yolks dropped into it. Like maybe that's like some Italian thing that we don't relate to. That maybe they wake up late at night, light up their glass, and walk around with egg yolks and some water. I don't know, but it's. And then in my notes, I said, It said this is a really, really baffling event, and I would say it's the most. It's the first baffling event, but that wouldn't be true. This is like the fifth or tenth. Baffling event that has happened, which including the light up tulips.
Yeah,
like it's so weird. The design is weird, and also hold on, I was trying to see here. Lavanna's face of pustules. I do think it's bees like wax that they made it
probably.
With. But her mouth definitely can't move. It's only able to move enough to spew gross fluids out.
Yeah,
of
so it gives that great. Quality of unmoving. It's clearly I love that in these mm-hmm. movies where it's just kind of like in Tokusatsu where the monster's mouth, the face doesn't move, like
yeah,
I love
or
that.
Like if it does they have to like pry it open and then it stays that way and then they put it closed again.
Yeah.
Now look, I mean we said we were going to talk about our goals on this watch, like I feel like I'm getting in the weeds a little, so I just want to go back to like when we first started watching this again, I was like, I want to know about this fetus. You know what I mean? Like, because in the beginning, we see the cosmos and we see like a kind of glowing red fetus with a heartbeat. And there's this like, it always cuts to this like fetus. And it's like a gross looking fetus. But it's like, you know, those in utero videos that we've all seen and shots of like the fetus developing in it. Like picture that, but the fetus isn't curled up. It's like laying out straight, kind of like a Sour Patch Kid. It's like a big...
Good,
Sour Patch
good,
Kid.
Good vision, Tara. That was good.
Thank you. It's like a big Sour Patch Kid of a fetus laying kind of straight with different color lighting and just inexplicably at times. You know, you just don't expect the fetus and then there'll be like a scene and then you just see the fetus. And like, again, why? And are we gonna talk about the end? Are we gonna
talk about everything? This
okay,
is not
yeah,
like
yeah,
a, it's not like
not
a movie.
Like a,
there's not spoiling.
We can
is
tell.
Impossible.
Yeah, we can tell everybody what happens, and then they can watch it, and then they still won't.
Trust
understand
me. Yeah,
what
yeah, yeah.
Happened.
I think
okay.
listening to this, then watching it, is a good way to go, because you have some sort of frame, and you'll
yeah.
still be surprised.
Yeah. So that. Well, I mean, I guess with the fetus, we can go into the occultist. Why don't we talk about the occultist?
Fantastic. Because this is a great death scene from her.
So they go check out Esther the occultist. And she explains on the topic of Lavanna that she was a witch who lived in Prague in the 13th century. Now, I just want to tell you, Mike, stop here and say 13th century, but Sybil was the 19th century. So I'm just saying... What is up with Sybil at this point? But I'm going to keep going. Oh, Thomas de Quincey. But Thomas de Quincey was dead. Whatever. Okay. She said it was a witch who lived in Prague in the 13th century. It wasn't Baudelaire who wrote about it. It was Thomas de Quincey in 1845. And it was a translation from an earlier text. And he wrote Suspiria de Profundis. And said that Lavanna can take over the body of anyone who concentrates on her hard enough, and you shouldn't use Lavanna the name. You shouldn't make a film about her. Don't take the risk of summoning her, because again, she can incorporate anybody.
They're like, whatever. We're making a mm-hmm. movie.
And so then I had to pause this a lot so that I could really, you got to get the lore straight, right? I thought maybe I wasn't paying attention hard enough when the occultist read from the Suspiria de Profundis, which I actually did you can get the text for free, and I read it to see if it was in there. It's not in there, Mike, but I'll read what they say about Lavanna in the actual text from Thomas DeQuincy. But I digress. The esoterist. I don't know why I'm trying to make it all fit together. It's like,
I mean, that's part of it.
Oh, I love a puzzle. It's part of the fun, right?
Part of the fun is actually trying to make this batshit movie make any sense.
Just want to see where they were coming from. So, if she takes the body of a young woman born under the sign of the sixth moon, there is no way to stop her. But if she was first reincarnated a male, she will have to sacrifice a newborn child in order to regain the powers that will make it possible for her to carry out her complete revenge. Now let's just, and it's like I wanted her to say it slowly, like, if she takes the body of a young woman born under the sign of the sixth moon, okay, there's no way to stop her. No way.
Can't stop her.
So I'm like, okay, well, do we know any women? No one said what moon they were born under, so I guess that's, we're not dealing with that. But if she is first reincarnated a male, she will have to sacrifice a newborn child in order to regain the powers that will make it possible for her to carry out her complete
revenge.
So
this is when I said that must mean that she was reincarnated as Levin.
Yeah, and then Mike's like, Levin, Lavanna, okay. But, and my question then is, does that make the fetus make more or less sense?
Trust me.
Why the fetus?
Trust me, none of it seems to add up in any way because the baby is still being hunted to be murdered. It is actually unclear if Levin is Lavanna or, again, the clarity of the possession is really out of whack.
The clarity is out of whack. Yes, that is a really good way to say it. But yes, Thomas DeQuincy, he first published in 1845. And yes, he is famous. We will all know him from the classic tale, Confessions of an English Opium Eater. I'm sure everybody had the, like, Dover edition. Remember Dover when you could buy things for, like, a dollar, like,
so
the
good
books and all that stuff? So we'll remember that. But, yes, this is not a publication of an earlier text. It is actually from his opium-riddled fantasy life and about how he walks and with the sorrows of the sisters. So I'll just, should I read some from it?
Please do, Tara.
And then this is from Lavanna and her sisters. Therefore, it is Lavanna that often communes with the powers that shake a man's heart. Therefore, it is that she dotes upon grief. These ladies, I say softly to myself, on seeing the ministers with whom Lavanna was conversing, these are the sorrows, and they are three in number. As the graces are three who dress a man's life with beauty, the parse are three who weave the dark areas of a man's life in their mysterious loom, always with the colors, sad in part, sometimes angry with tragic crimson and black. The furies are three who visit the retributions called from other sides of the grave, offenses that walk upon this. And once even the muses were but three who fit the harp, the trumpet, or the lute to the great burdens of a man's impassioned creations. These are the sorrows, all three of whom I know. The last words I say now, but in Oxford I said, one of whom I know, and the others so too surely I shall know. For already in my fervent youth I saw, dimly relieved upon the dark background of my dreams, the imperfect lineaments of the awful sisters.
Setting us up, little did he know that over a century later, Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat would incorporate
his tale, Lavanna and Our Ladies of Sorrow. And again, let me see. I would like to know, when did Thomas DeQuincy pass away?
Well, while you're looking that up, the occultist does have a great death scene because she's now paranoid. She's walking around the city and she just...
She's like, I've said the name Lavanna too much. Okay, he passed away in 1859. So again, no Sybil tie here.
Yeah.
We have no tie to Sybil.
So she's just freaking out and then trying to get in touch with Mark. And then at this point, she just sort of explodes. It is crazy.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, she, you know, if that's not Lavanna's full power, she can just blow somebody up.
From the inside
from
out.
From the inside.
And then
it's great.
Cutting with that is we have the producer who's producer and writer. Or, sorry, we have the writer who's working on the script by his pool. And then he mysteriously gets attacked Which then leads
and
him.
And we see a black cat in that scene. Oh, and then I just want to say what Lavanna said to the occultist. She
said,
I am not content to rend your body asunder. And so she didn't want to just rend the body asunder. She actually blew out her guts.
Just blew out those guts, and it looks insane. But Tara, I was going to say, the writer, he gets attacked. He gets stabbed, but he's still conscious enough, and this ends up leading him to driving a car through Mark and Anne's house.
And, you know, he did. He was with it enough. Like, we thought he was surely toast. He got the green light treatment. He got scratched up. He got stabbed in the back. But he did take his, like, Fiat and drive it through the front of the house. But it's one of those great driving through the house scenes where, like, he drives to, like, the first pillars and, like, they're, like, really cleanly cut. And you can see where the frame of the set, like, they, like, gently, like, put the car inside and cut the frames away. Like, they're all very clean. And then they just threw some rubble on top. One of my favorite, like, it's just such a joy. You know what I mean? It's like in a Hercules movie or some other thing when they, like, knock down a big stone wall and it's clearly, like, styrofoam and they just kind of roll around just so satisfyingly. Like, this is one of those. It's definitely, like, not only a gimmicked wall, but, no one was injured in this
scene. It's insane, and it's also Anne's reaction is really not as shocked as it should be from someone driving through your
home.
I guess after she's been confronted with Lavanna and all these supernatural...
her baby was stolen at some point when she was having a vision. But I think, like, she was distracted because she was so distraught that she put on this, like, pink flannel shirt and some, like, wide-leg black pants, some garbage tennis shoes, and a wrinkly green linen blazer. It's terrible. I don't know what went on in their minds to put this outfit on this woman, but just for the apex of the scene, she's got to be running around trying to save her own life and wearing this. Mike, how did you feel about it?
Yeah, wasn't a fan of her outfit, but I am a fan of what is going on, because she goes to confront Levin. When she gets to Levin's house, the whole place is lit up, neon lights, cobwebs. And he, we find out, is dead and is being controlled. And this scene is great. He's trying to convince her to shoot herself. It'll all end.
Well, I mean, this is where the thing happens. And I know you don't want me to laugh when it happens. But when she confronts Levin and says, I want my baby back. It's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It is funny. You know it's funny when she says, I want my baby back.
Yeah.
And the way she says it, and he's like a reanimated corpse and his guts are open. And then she just earnestly looks at him and she's like, I want my baby back.
I know.
And
it's funny.
That's really funny.
But Tara, while this is happening, her husband is...
Kill yourself.
...having an affair with Carolyn Monroe, with Nora, who wants that part. And Tara, something happens to just let us know that Nora is... a bad chick, that she is not to be trusted, Tara. That you could say she's kind of like the Dirty City. Oh. Tara, I think it's time to cue it up. One of the songs that plays, it's not in the credits, and it took us a while to figure out what this is, but we just taped it right off the movie.
And you're welcome for the quality of this, but I really think you need to experience this song and the fantastic lyrics.
I'm thinking of it as Nora's theme song at this point in the movie. Tara, why don't you put this up to the microphone and let the people hear?
Thank you.
Yes, yes. This is Cara Monroe's in the bathtub. Nora's in the bathtub.
How long do you think you'll stay?
Hey, she's just great scene of her taking a giant bath after she's banged Mark. She knows she got what she wants. She's gotten what she wants, and she's just that femme fatale, that evil woman, dirty like the city.
It's a little bit less dirty than the city.
Slightly.
Oh my God. And that bathtub size for an Italian bathtub is quite big, quite juicy. I mean, and then we know that she has had a complete heel turn. She is now truly evil. She takes all of her luscious hair and she sweeps it over to one side of her head so it cascades down. And then she puts on her gorgeous formal wear. She puts on a satin dress, a satin cape.
And she goes
full jewels.
She goes to meet Lavanna herself. She's been in cahoots this whole time, Tara, with the actual Lavanna. But, Tara, she has not done Lavanna's work like Lavanna wants it to be done. She just fucking kills her.
Well, Lavanna doesn't just kill her. I mean, we didn't talk about the refrigerator repairman.
Yeah, I realized we didn't, but I just was going.
She was hanging out with the refrigerator repairman from hell or something. I don't know. Whatever it is, Lavanna can control people.
But it's
really
true.
Well,
she doesn't.
We don't need to tell you all the details because we'll be here for hours.
She doesn't just kill her. She has her kill herself.
And that is the most evil scene ever. She hands her a straight razor and says, "I'm done with you. You haven't done a good. Like, I don't appreciate your work. Gonna need you to kill yourself now." And she does. It slits her own throat.
So good.
Right there with a straight razor. I think that's amazing. Now, Mike, we didn't discuss when, like, not to beat a dead horse, not to harp on it again, but the appearance of Sybil at these random times, like when Lavanna appears, Sybil will also appear and be like, "Touch me." And she's like holding, she's like wearing like a Victorian dress and she's like, "Just touch me and come with me." And then all of a sudden, Lavanna will appear and like,
out.
Yeah.
And guts puke out of a TV screen, like with green goo all over.
Yeah. There's like one scene where she's in a TV and she's like, "I just wanted to talk to you, Anne. And then just come and touch me." And then Anne goes to touch her, like the TV explodes and guts come out, like literal, like guts, like intestines.
And also, it's so many times we get shots of the house with glowing lights in the house, glowing lights around the house, the moon right behind the house, Lavanna's face with eyes glowing behind the house.
Yeah.
All this superimposed, much like he did with Hercules. So it looks incredible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. I left a note for myself where I just said, again, what's up with this fetus thing? I don't really know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to let it happen. And then, you know, when we get to the final fever pitch where we don't know, like,
so this final fever pitch,
if you think you know
nuts.
What happens, like if you thought that maybe we would have Nora stick around and like be Lavanna or something cool is going to happen. No, she's like, everybody's just dying off, right? Like Mark, the husband's been stabbed and Nora has slit her own throat and they blew up the refrigerator repairman.
Mark's
the
been stabbed and
missing.
Ran and drove his car into a house and died.
Levin's gone. Dead. They stabbed his nurse, which we think is controlling Levin like some kind of like meat puppet man, right? So everybody's kind of gone and you're like, what am I left with? Like, what's going on, Lavanna? You know, the occultist is toast. She blew up and gets back to her home and all of a sudden she's confronted with that little fan named William who's like, hey, what's going on? And Anne's like, "Did you have a good time tonight, William? You can stop making telepathic illusions. You can stop now. I figured it out." And then all of a sudden, William, the little boy, turns into Lavanna. And she goes, "You can stop that too." And then Lavanna turns into
Sarah the babysitter.
And then it's great because then she, like, gives an explanation. She was like, "I just realized you were the only one who had the opportunity to essentially, I don't know what exactly she said, but, like, gaslight me into
basically,
believing all of these
all
things.
These hallucinations."
So you get to this point and you're like, oh, they were actually working on some sort of, like, plot thing where, like, if you were trying to figure it out, like, okay, Sarah was the one who said that nothing was harming the baby, but there was something harming the baby, who said that William wasn't there, but he was there, who saw the refrigerator repairman, but he was there. Like if you wanted to be pragmatic about it, it's like for a split second, they were like, we're going to make this believable and really like incorporate things that happen in a normal way into a plot. And then you're all of a sudden, like when this is revealed, I was kind of reeling for a moment, like, oh my God, like, is this going to have like a, is this a mystery? Like, is this a normal, is this like a giallo? Is this like a slasher? Like, is this going to get wrapped up in some sensical way, Mike?
Well, what happens is that the babysitter eyes start glowing and she shoots some lasers right into Anne, and Anne just blows up. Blows up right in front of her
eyes.
So
then you're like, okay, well, I guess it's over. I guess Anne's gone. The babysitter wins. Like, this is going to be a normal movie. And you know, everything's kind of tied up more neatly than I thought it would be based on the series of events that we've watched in the film. And then all of a sudden you hear Anne's voice and she goes, sorry, Sarah, I can control time now. I can send it reeling backwards.
She can control time.
So... And then it's kind of like this pause where, like, you're like, wait, what? I can control time now? And so then Lavanna goes back into her tomb.
Mark comes back and stabs Sarah
in the back with a giant stake, but really a log, like a pointed, thick log, kind of like you would, like a really big one for a really big vampire. And then... everything kind of is like they kind of hug and the baby comes back.
Baby comes back and then.
And then you just kind of hear like the voice. Oh, and then you see the fetus again.
Yeah.
And then
the cosmos.
And the cosmos. And then Anne is talking to Sybil like in the cosmos. And she was like, this is the best of possible timelines.
Yeah.
I have Mark. I have my baby. Who needs more?
She's talking to her on the TV and Sybil's like, Nora's your best friend again.
Yeah,
Mark's your husband. Your baby's back.
Only your husband.
And it's all done. And the movie's going to be made. And it's going to be one of the biggest hits in film history. And it's like, and that's that.
Yeah. And then they're like, well, all problem solved. You can just control time, find the best possible timeline, occupy it.
It's all wrapped up.
And then at some point, like they said, like, you know, us fairies and Lavanna are not that different from each other. And you're like, what do you mean you're not that different from each other? What are you even talking about? Like, nothing. So I just yelled into this microphone.
Of course, it ends on the very final shot with Lavanna's voiceover. And we see that the little baby is possessed. And the red eyes start glowing. And we cut. That is the movie.
Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat.
Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat.
That is the movie.
Wow, it is.
I don't know if we were clear that is the title of the movie, is Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat, at some point.
I just don't even know if this conversation relays the insanity that this movie is. I mean, I just really hope everyone goes
and... more confused. Like, I feel like I was making all of that up at this point. And maybe the fetus is like... representative of the spirit of Lavanna to be reborn again, you know, Mike, like, and then Lavanna's just waiting as the omnipresent fetus, just hanging out until she gets her chance to like jump into a body. Cause we also didn't say that Lavanna is the goddess of childbirth in ancient Roman culture. So maybe that her representation in this timeline is a fetus.
Well, this movie is totally...
I'm going to help them out by the...
totally insane. Can't emphasize the neon lights that are just constantly shifting and clashing and going everywhere. Can't emphasize the disgustingness of Lavanna herself.
The grossness
of it, the gore, and just the overall... insanity that is this movie. I loved it.
You don't know what's a dream, what's not a dream, what will be a dream. Check it out.
Yeah, hey yeah, so many points where something happens then it's like, I wasn't really dead, I was dreaming.
Weren't really dead? Could not do that in under an hour.
Hey, that's okay. And I feel like there's probably more we could say, but I gotta just say, go check out The Black Cat for yourself and see if you have any more clarity than we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
We don't have anything picked out for next week, but we'll post it over on the IG at some point as a teaser in the story. So make sure to check those. People have been responding to them. They've been enjoying the little preview about what we're going to do so they can catch up. Or, like I said, I do think listening to this before you see it, I don't think it in any way. I would.
Well, they've already done it. So if they've gotten this far, they've already heard it. So you don't have to like tell them whether or not they should, because they just did it. But I guess the reassuring that now that you've heard all about it, it won't deter from what you're seeing, because it won't make sense.
That is true. But yeah, we'll pick out something.
Or it will make sense, and maybe that'll be better. I don't know.
Pick out something for next week and post it somewhere so you know. Well, thank you so much for listening. The feedback has been really cool. I love hearing from everybody, and you know, we've been really enjoying doing this, and we're going to continue to do this week after week over here. So thank you so much for the support. We'll talk to you next week.